I'm at the Arterial Lacrosse Hall of Fame. It's December the 14th, 2004, and I'm with Pat Smith, who used to play for St. Catharines from the years 19... let me say where are we at here. Pat played for St. Kitts between 1940 and 1951, but he missed the 5 years during the war from 1941 to 1945. Pat, before 1940, did you play any junior lacrosse? Did you?
Yeah, yes. Yeah, I played for St. Catharines. We went to the finals 2 years in a row, and then we played Aurelia for the finals, and we got beat out in 5 games, and so I was picked up to go west with Aurelia as a supplement, and I went to Aurelia, and we won the Minter Cup in Winthrop.
Which was in 39?
And you know, I think that would then be 1940, I think. The pitcher's in the case in there, anyway. And that's the junior lacrosse, I say.
So who would have been on that team?
Then I went to Hamilton from there to play senior. I played a year of senior and then went into service. On that team, we had
Johnny Hewitt?
Johnny Hewitt, Drew McKenzie, we had Jack Yair and Bobby Golden. We had some, we picked up. And we won the, we beat New Westminster in 5 games out there.
Okay, now it's really hard to find Junior A stats.
Uh-huh.
And the first I could come up, we're still working on your stuff. Mm-hmm. And I've got you playing 2 games in 1940 in the regular season for the
senior.
You would have been, for senior. You were underage, I guess, that year,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Do you remember? Were you called up for 2 games?
I was called up for a couple games, yeah.
And you got 1 goal. Is that all you remember?
That's all.
Do you think I might have got that? Straight then?
I think so, yeah.
Okay, 19.
And on that particular team, being a call up like that, I didn't get that much floor time. I remember scoring 1 goal, and I thought it was quite a thing at my age to score a goal in the senior age. So.
And in 41, you went and played for Hamilton. How did you get down there?
Well, there was no way I could break into the lineup that they had in St. Catharines, so they asked the coach of Hamilton he was a St. Catharines fan, and he was up there coaching. Now it took Dougie Cole and myself, the Asker, and another lad from St. Catharines. And they asked us if we wanted to come up and try and make the team. So we went up, and back in them days, all they'd give you would be a job, and the war had just nicely got started, and not nicely, but it got started. And we went up. I made the team, and just so he didn't make it. And Doug Cole and Carson Myers and myself, we were all on that team from Hamilton in 41.
So then you went into the war.
Yeah,
you were only, 21 years old?
Yes, I was 21.
So how did you, you enlist back in those days?
Yeah. I went to the West Coast with this unit, and then they asked for volunteers for this special services unit, half American, half Canadian. And we were to jump into Norway, which would have been a total disaster because it was strictly a follow-up operation, but the last minute they had no way of getting us out, so they canceled the whole thing. The Americans wouldn't put people into someplace like that and leave them there. They get out the best way they knew how. Their contention was that we learned how to ski, and military ski, and we could ski from, if there was any of us left, we could ski from where we were in Norway to Sweden, which was about 70 miles across there. And they would intern you for the rest of the war.
So how do you become a paratrooper?
Well, that was part of it.
Had you ever been on an airplane even before the war?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I'd been in airplanes. I'd never jumped. I'd never had the occasion. And I might say that was the first time I looked down. And everything looked like the size of ants. I thought, you know, much to myself, what? Well, I got myself into it here. But it proved that I never got to actually like it, but it was a means of transportation, that's all. You know, you're in, and when they say the door's open, get out, well, you better get out.
How many drops would you have done in your lifetime?
In combat, I only had the one, but in actual training and things of that nature, I may have, 18 or 19, I guess. They jumped. See, during a wartime, you can't petrol, gasoline, things like that, they're tough to come by because they want to save them for the fighters and the bombers going over, doing the bombing. So they rigged up a device that they had these barrage balloons that take up 1,200 feet, and they had a big basket underneath it. Mm. And they load up about 8 guys in the basket, and they had one jump master, get you 1,200 feet, and said they had an anchor on a long cable on a big winch, and you jumped out of that, and just to learn how to land, and because everything landing depends on the wind anyway. So if you're in a high wind way, you don't know where you're going to go.
So any of your jumps, you ever hurt yourself?
Yeah, I tore the rotator cuff in my right arm, and I just recently got a small pension for that because it began to bother the daylight suddenly. But aside from that, my legs and everything like that, they hung in there, and I was able to come back and play the cross. So
you said you parachuted once during the war.
Yeah.
Where did you land? Like, where were you?
We're at a place called Salerno.
What country is that?
Italy. Italy.
Yeah.
And then I joined a Canadian parachute battalion, and it was all set to go on the trip east of the Rhine River jump, and they assigned me. I was a sergeant, so they assigned me to a glider division, and the Germans were retreating so fast that we never even got off the ground. So we finally got over back over to Europe and come right back to England. And then the ship was right home then.
And were you a spy?
Well, not really a spy, because it was they knew you were there. The chase paratroopers, they didn't think too much of them. So once they got the first drift of parachute drop and drops fly, they respond quickly. Take the Germans, they'd send fat wagons and things of that nature, and they'd try and get as many as they could in the air, but if you're a swinging target, they don't And actually, more guys hurt themselves hitting the ground than it was ever hit.
So were you ever shot in the war?
No. No, I had a little piece of shrapnel just above the tail end and the back. But no, I was never shot.
Wow.
I had a couple of tight posts in my shirt, but one went through my tunic on the side and in the pockets. But no, I was never there. The man upstairs, and said, he had his arm around my back, and when I was told to duck. So we meet every year, the Americans, and they're talking now that they're just going to disband because there's no nobody left. No, there's only really a couple hundred of them left. They don't have enough to keep up a financial base.
So did you stay in the war right until the end when Germany's...
Yeah. I was, and then we came right back to the United States, right back to Canada, the Canadian Persian Battalion. We went right to we were going to go right to Fort Lewis, Washington, for a massive big jump we were going to make into Japan, which would have been a bloodbath for somebody, because there was going to be over 20,000 casualties jump, and wave after wave after wave lay in the outskirts of Tokyo. So it would have been a real mess. But you know, they dropped the bomb, or that took care of that war. So they broke us up and put it back in the discharges.
So you were out of the war long enough to, or in time to play that 1945 season.
Yeah, I come home. And
it must be nice to get the
call. The war wasn't ever. In the late summer of 45, I played. We went to the West Coast, and of course most of us were still in the service. I was. I played on a line with Bill Ham Nelson and Stewie Scott, myself and Jimmy McMahon, but the big thing was that I think we're all still in the service, and we hadn't been discharged yet.
Stu Scott, you, Jimmy McMahon, who were the other two who would have been on that line?
Bill Nelson.
Bill Nelson, is he still alive?
No, he's dead.
Okay.
He died a couple of years, 3 years ago.
And who was the fifth member of that line?
Well, it was three forwards and one rover.
Okay, and then the two defense come back.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the old seven-man game. That's six players out.
Yeah.
Did you know, I told you today that you're the third oldest living lacrosse player still around.
You're kidding.
Yeah.
You know, Larry,
should you punch Carlo?
I don't want to be the...
Oh, you don't
want to be the first.
Yeah, but it speaks alternative. You're older than Jimmy McMahon, even.
Yes, I am. Yeah.
And Stu Scott still around? A lot of
Jimmy and I, we grew up together. We look back, we married girlfriends in Niagara Falls, and he's just two doors from me. And so Jimmy and I, we've been friends since we were 5 years old.
Did any of your brothers, do you have any brothers in
Niagara Falls? No. I was the only... They claimed I was the only idiot in the family. That's my mother said when I didn't tell her I'd joined the Pershing or that I was jumping. I was doing the motorcycle specialist on the West Coast. So
when you were on the West Coast, I guess you never got to play any lacrosse.
I practiced with the Nanaimo Clippers. We were stationed, the home base was Nanaimo, and before I could even get in a game, this special service came up, and about 20 of us all joined at one time, so I never did get around, but I practiced two or three times every morning.
How old was your weight and your height when you played? And what you did you shoot?
Area, I was shrunk as far as height was concerned, but I was on my discharge papers, I read over 100 were five sick and 155 pounds, but I'm still 155 to 60 pounds.
So you kept in shape in case you come back.
Not so much shape, but I got fat when my wife was sick. I lost a lot of weight.
Well, which hand did you shoot with?
Right.
Right, okay, because I'll put them on your stats.
I was a center man on that line. And then when I went to Hamilton, they put me in the center. I played part-time on the line. This coach, Alec McKenzie, or Alec McPherson, was there.
Oh, yeah, I got a picture of him. I got him in 1939. Program.
Oh, yeah.
And he's in there smoking a cigarette. And, back in those days, that was okay. Nowadays,
he was a real he was a real personality. He was, that's what he said. I look like an Indian, so he said, I'll put you on a line with Isaacs and Bobby Jameson and Jack Squires. I said, well, Jack Squires didn't play that much, but we had people, Southwick. He played.
What was his first name, Southwick?
Dylan. Dylan Southwick. Yeah.
I wish I thought, I didn't know what I'd be doing, so.
Yeah. Dylan Southwick.
I don't know if I had his name or not. I'll have it anyway. So 1946 comes along. That was, will that be your favorite year? Is when the man got that year?
Yeah. See, when we came home there, we weren't ready, mentally we weren't ready for lacrosse. We were so elated to get home and
to be alive.
And we were still in very good shape because our coach was George Carroll, and George said, "Let us guys come back and serve, we're in better shape than the fellas that stayed home." And we were playing for the team at that time, but we were. I was in pretty good shape, so. But.
Well, that was your best year. You had 45 goals that year.
I was ready to party. So we had a real ruckus out there. We didn't leave very many friends, I might say, on the West Coast, because Bill Whittaker, he was quite a wild man when he got going.
Would he be the best goalie you ever saw?
Yeah, I thought.
That's what a lot of people say.
I never. Bill could. He could throw a ball to the crease, and he would. By the time it got to your center, if you didn't catch it, it would knock you off your feet. Because he never threw anything with an arc to it. It was always just crash. And he, I don't know what it was. Always a mix-up because. When we went out there, nobody ever told us they had changed rules. When we got there, they had moved the nets out from the backboards, and you could play around them. Well, down here, you couldn't. And we were never told this. And we get out there, and we're sort of, because you can go from there. Well, when these fellas had done that, Bill, he just tomahawked him. He just, and he got in a better battle with several of them. Glenn, when the game was over, Bill was, he liked to,
talk
to him. Yeah, he imbibed a little bit. And he went down to the referee's room and he grabbed his referee and he
I think
shook.
I read about that.
Ooh,
one
he
of my
shook the daylight salary. You know, that was all dressed up in a beautiful tan suit, and Bill had him, he just wiped the floor up with him, and of course they disqualified him from any Canadian lacrosse participation ever again.
After that 46?
Yeah, and so we, that's when Dougie Cabell, next year in 46, he took over as goaltender in Toronto. But Bill, this was in the 45 series.
Right. Oh, that this happened?
Yeah.
Okay, so who was your goalie in 46 then? And he won that?
Doug Flavel.
Oh, I always thought it was Whitaker.
No.
So once Whitaker got messing around with referees, that was it for Man Cup?
For any Dominion playoffs, he was
banned for life, or just...
Well, this was the verdict that came down, that he was finished for life for being at the sharp rate.
And how old would he have been in 45? Would he be near the end of his career anyway?
I would say he was getting on, but he played several years after that.
Just in the regular league, right?
In the regular OLA. He could play OLA, but he could not play Canadian. So he was, and we played some winter lacrosse.
Oh, down in the Pro League.
Yeah, well, we played for a team out of Oleham. There was five or six of us. Anyway.
Were you on that team that, in 1949, a bunch of guys got suspended for it?
I was on that team, from Oleham. And
how come you never got suspended?
Well, for some reason or other, I must have hid under the carpet or something. I never got called, but Stewie and Jimmy McMahon and Bill Nelson and the
Hung Morton, he never played after that. He played that one.
Yeah.
And then once he was banned, that was the end of his OLA career.
Yeah. He went to referee and then, it was a good player.
Would he have been on that 46 team?
Yeah, he's in that big picture, I see.
How many would be survivors? You, Jimmy McMahon?
Yeah, in that group, there you have Stewie Scott.
Stewie Scott, three of you.
And there's really not that many. When you look at it, you start pointing your fingers. But it's the same with all my war buddies. And I look at some of the pictures I got of them. Where have all these guys gone?
Were you on another Man Cup team too?
No.
Just the 46,
huh? Just the 46.
Remember that dinner they had a while ago, I guess it was a year ago, the St. Catherine Gold Boys?
Yeah.
And they commemorated one of the Man Cup teams, and there were three guys, I think Jim McMahon might have been a follow-up, and Whitey Crick, Kenny Croft maybe? Maybe Jim McMahon wasn't even on it.
Yeah.
I thought it was 1949, but you played that all those years.
They won several during the war. St. Catharines, I think they won two or three Man Cups.
Okay, it must have been that year. Maybe it was 1942.
Yeah.
And Jim McMahon was too young for it. So 46, you figure there was the 3 years on it.
Yeah.
And then you played 47. You still had another good year, 34 goals. 48, 49, 50, 51. Was that your last year?
Pretty well, yeah.
Did you play any odd games after that? Like, am I missing?
Not that. What year was that?
You're 51.
51.
Yeah.
No, I think that must have been, I can't, memory escapes me, but I was, I got married in some house, and things were still tough to get, so I had to scrounge around and get building material, but no, I think that must have been my last year. I played some, a little bit of winter lacrosse after that. But,
yeah, I can't get those winter lacrosse stats.
No.
Right, but I've got you down for 206 goals, regular season goals, which is good. Like, I'm always working on this stuff.
Yeah.
And, it's getting there. I'm going to give you that anyway.
Yeah, thank you.
And when I do it again, I will have your height and weight and stuff. Is there anything else that comes to mind of years of playing, and any special characters, anything that happened? You know, like J.J. Hill tells me about the time he was they stole a calf one time before a game. They were drinking a little bit.
Yeah.
And the guy that he's with ended up being a cattle rustler.
Oh,
ended up 5 years in jail for cattle rustling. And the calf crapped all over the back seat of the car.
Oh, geez,
that was a good one. Did you get on the internet at all?
No, I don't.
Because what I'm doing is all the interviews I do, I'm putting them on this, it's called the Bible of the Cross. So your interview will be on there, and anybody in the world can get on there and listen to it.
Mm-hmm.
And like it's there for permanently, forever. That's what I like.
And what's it? What's
it's called the Bible of the Cross. So,
yeah.
So if you've got any grandkids or anybody,
it's
called www.thebibleoflacrosse.com.
Yeah.
And it's got all everybody's stats and stuff like this are on there.
Uh-huh.
Just
my son is thoroughly interested in, and like both my military and my remember they had me dig out my medals and put the parachute airborne hat on and attend a function at the city hall, and he was so keenly interested in it.
Well, show your son this site, and he can get on and look at a lot of the cross stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You're there, and there's a lot of guys. Got a lot of St. Catharines people on there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because meeting new people.
Oh, my son library. He's good. They have. He does a lot of work on the computer on the internet. And, he's a lot of pictures. So I get
a bunch of pictures up there. I've even got one movie that's called The Creator's Game.
Uh-huh.
And it's a 25-minute movie. And Ross Powlis and Gaylord Powlis are on it. And a few other things. And I'm trying to get some old games put on there, too.
Yeah.
I don't have them. The oldest game I've got is 1974 NLL game.
Mm-hmm.
But that's 30 years ago now.
Yeah. Well, Ross was a wonderful guy. He owned St. Catharines. And Freddie Conradi talked him into playing the year for us in St. Catharines. It was pretty well towards the end of Ross's career. And he was still a powerhouse. But he was a very nice guy. And I think that one of the nicest guys I ever played in Cross was Phil Isaacs. Phil was always, no matter, he'd be cut and bleeding and banged up and smashed up. And yet, he always had that smile on his face, and he'd still come up to me and joke, because they played me at center for quite a few games with that line. It was funny that the person said it, the all India line. He said, even in the program, he told the guy, he said, oh yeah, he was from the reserve at Brantford. He said, don't worry about him. He said, he's an Indian. Just keep him away from the bottle, that's all. And Isaacs would come back to me and he'd say, listen, Patty, you just piece the ball out. As soon as you get it, slip it to me. Okay, I'll be going. You slip it to me. Don't talk to anybody else. Talk to me.
Would you say he was the best player who you played with or against?
I would say so. I can't remember ever. And Phil would throw you a ball and it just like it was handed to you.
Yeah.
You know? It's always so, it was a soft pass. It was never a bullet to kind of take your head off or anything like that. I played with Jackie Gere on that Mentor Cup team and Bobby and Fulham. Even Big Red Story, if you can imagine that played on
the team. Is Red Story still on?
Red?
Yeah.
Yes, he is. Yeah.
I'd like to talk
but
to him.
He
too.
Is. And I imagine Tigger Ben would be over 90, he'd be over 90 years old.
Because he used to tell some, he wrote a book.
Oh, he could tell.
He used to after dinner.
He was not the Cross wasn't one of his best pastimes, but got a stick and he kept jumping into the pocket of it. He had it down, it looked like a landing net for fishing, you know. But he'd get that thing and he'd get the big arm out and he'd take off and he'd be elbowing the guys in the face and knocking them up away because he was a big man, you know.
He was a good football player, you know. He got a couple
marvelous, yeah.
touchdowns in a, you know, Grey Cup game. Right?
Yeah, yeah.
And the hockey, everybody knows about it.
Yeah. Yeah.
I've got some stats on Punch and Mark and
Lacrosse. Yeah.
I never knew, but he actually played. I've got him down for at least one game with Aurelia.
Oh yeah.
And I don't know. I can't remember which year it was. And then, of course, it was a lot in Quebec.
You see, he played. He played. He had. In fact, he was a playing coach for that Quebec team. And we beat him in 45, and then we beat him around beat him in 46, and we beat him both times in Quebec City. And the 45. Team, that was a good club, and they had quite a few St. Catharines kids on, like Wheeler Croft and Nickel Hahn and John Kosmaski. They had some pretty good lacrosse players on that club, and Punch, he played on he was a defenseman. He was more actively involved, Anthony, with the coaching of the club while he was playing, and it didn't let him test his true abilities, so to speak. But they had some good prospects on that club. And we managed to beat them. We just got by them in the first game. I think it was 13 goals scored on that first St. Catharines, and Stewie Scott still says today that Jimmy McMahon, him and I, each got 4 goals. We got 12 or 13.
Well, I've got the summary from all them, so I'll have to check them.
Yeah.
In the 45 or the 46?
In the 45.
Okay. Mm-hmm. It's on the Bible. It's actually, you can look that up.
Yeah.
That series.
Yeah.
So I might not have game by game, but
yeah.
I've had the game by game. See, I go through the old newspapers. I collect all of them. I photocopy them, and then I send them out west to Stan Shillington.
Mm-hmm.
He compiles everything, summarizes them, then he sends them back to me, and then I key them all into my computer and update all you guys' stats.
That's a great job.
You've been doing that for... Well, I've been doing my stuff for 35 years now.
Yeah.
And Stan, he I don't know if you know Stan Shillington, he lives in Coquitlam, and he's been doing it since 1958.
Mm-hmm.
And he's the one that got me doing it, really.
Yeah. Did you play the game?
I played, but I wasn't very good. Yeah. I came from Oshawa.
Oh, yeah.
And the first year I went out, Bishop was coach.
Yeah.
And I had long hair, and you can imagine what I was like. And we had Gaylord Powlett and Johnny Davis and Hinkson and... Oh, guys, what's his name? Donnie Stinson, who played on 7 men of that team, Jimmy Hicks. So I was a pretty hard team to break in.
That was a hard day. Yeah, well, that's the way that 38 dynasty, the NC Catcher, we won 2 or 3 man cups in a row or something like that. And that's when they called me up for a game. They called Bill Nelson and I at the same time. And I can remember the one night over in Mimico. I don't know
whether
you ever remember the
old outside. You know, I haven't even been to Mimico.
Oh, they played the dressing rooms. There were 2 boxcars from the railroad. Right. They brought them in there and dropped them in and tore up the tracks and left them sitting there. And that was the dressing rooms. And the floor was it was in horrible shape. The corners were just, you could run through there and if a ball came in, it hit and stopped and you just run through and scoop underneath and shake it out and you had the ball underway. But Mimico was a tough place to play. And we had some tremendous games. In fact, the year I went west with the Aurelias and the Terriers in Mitchell, we picked myself and the three other guys from St. Andrews. They had a powerful team, a brilliant, and we went 5 games with them, but then they said fifth game because we played in the neutral grounds. So they said we'll pick Mimico, we'll play it off Mimico. We went to two overtime periods and before this one fellow that went to Hamilton with me, it was a Greek kid, and he could shoot a ball. Boy, he could shoot a ball. And it wasn't big, it wasn't heavy, but he could throw a ball. And we went in the second overtime period, he scored the goal, the winning goal would be 11-10. But we ended up, they said, we were getting pretty banged up, and they said, you're from St. Catharines, you can pick a couple other players to head to your team, so you can walk in on them. We left the numbers anyway, and we did. We picked up Ham Nelson and Alvin Daniel. He went west with Doug Garrett. And after about 2 days, the word came through that, hey, you guys just lost the Miller Cup. You played two ineligible players. So he took it away from us. Never gave us a chance. That was the Western Catholics. And so he took it away from us. Like, wait, St. Catharines had a junior eight league and then West St. Catharines, where I live now, and we also had a team with a real good setup and good backing, and people were with us and everything. We had outdoor bowl over in the West End. And we had won the St. Catharines, four teams, and they took away from us. And, you know, I was debating whether to, you know, tell them to come to Lake, and they asked me to go to town and try out this junior club to get rid of the West. But then I thought, I was 19 years old, 18 years old, something like that, and they said, gee, how many trips am I going to get to the West Coast? So, with the war coming on, I said, what the heck am I? Better not turn this down. So, anyway, we went.
So, how many times did you get on the West Coast with St. Pitt's seniors?
Twice. And lost both the series, and but we won the junior, and the three of them. And then we beat the Simon Valley's town.
The 46 one?
Yeah, 46.
So that was your highlight of your career?
Yeah, I think so. I would say so, yes.
That's what Jim McMahon said, too?
Yeah. I enjoyed that because we drew well in Toronto, and we got a lot of bad publicity on it, 45 series from the West Coast. And of course, we didn't endear ourselves to the people out there. They didn't think that they got rid of a bunch of natives from the jungle or something. And they weren't too impressed with us. It was an experience, and of course you went by train, and it was about a 3-day trip up there and 4 nights, and by the time you got there, you thought you were never going to get back. So, anyway.
I would have liked to have been 10 years older to have got to see some of the field, like the box across and those outdoor bowls.
Yeah.
That must have been something.
Yeah. I always enjoyed the outdoor bowls. Rather than there were various places. When Owen Sound would come in, Piper Bain had a Key Coastal Junior Club, that arena team. And we played indoors at Owen Sound. And it was terrible. It was stifling. It just you couldn't it would be 100 degrees in there, and on the equipment, it was just suffocating. But outside, there was always a little bit of breeze, and that old egg bowl at St. Catharines, you could...
playing under the moon and
yeah,
stars.
Yeah, you could go out and...
4,500
lay in the grass and cool off between periods, so...
When you won the Man Cup in 46, was it Maple Leaf Gardens you played at?
Yeah.
And how would they? How many fans would they have there?
I think we had in the area around 10 or 11,000 people.
That'd be nice playing in front of all these.
Yeah, it was. Well, it's so massive that you didn't see too much of it. And then hard concrete floor. Thanks, Tom. Thank you.
Okay, we can go.
Okay, we're almost at the end of this anyway.
Yeah.
Pat, you got anything to add? Because remember, this is going on. Fans all over the world are going to be able to listen to this.
That's great.
Because like that woman there, Twyla, she's from Texas.
Yeah.
And this summer she listened to the Man Cup game. And the announcer, it was when, O'Toole scored a goal.
Mm-hmm.
So the announcer said, oh, I'll have to check with the Whopper to see if it's a record or not. So she's, I've talked to her and listening to the pod, so she's got it on the internet radio, and she's hearing him say my name up there.
Yeah.
And that was very neat, because we started to pull it out together through the internet that.
Well, you know, the way the game is played now, I think it's even an improvement over the game when I played it. I like the 30-second rule. I like that. And there's a possibility that there's a few more whistles in there that they could knock out. But as it is now, I think the rules are much better now than they were when I played. Like, you could take a fellow like Jimmy McMahon's brother, Wandy. Wandy was a great ball writer. And you'd get a penalty. He'd take it, and he'd have everybody chasing him. And he was very shifty. And I think I always said, I don't think Jimmy totally agreed with me, but of course I was like Monty. Monty was a good friend of mine, and he played right with us kids on the big open fields we had there. And Monty, he'd take the ball and. He'd say, like when he ended up coaching us for a couple of years after he retired, and he was trying to show us all of these various shifts, but you could always make the shift all right, but then you'd look around and you wouldn't have no ball. You'd be gone, you'd drop it or something like that. But I always thought Jimmy was an all-around better lacrosse player than Monty was. I think Jimmy possibly scored more goals than Wandy did. I'm not sure. But
yeah, I've been digging up their stats.
Yeah.
And they're really close.
Yeah.
And right now, Jimmy's maybe 40 goals ahead of him.
Uh-huh.
But they're really close. Like, all of a sudden, I'll find some missing stats.
Mm-hmm.
And Wandy will move up closer, you know?
Oh, yeah.
It's been going like this. I've been having a score. I don't know if I got that. I don't think I have it with me. But that's on the Bible.
Yeah.
It's got the top all time.
Yeah. Jimmy was so much later. I think Jimmy played across at about 135 pounds. And he was skin and bones. And he wasn't that tall. But and Jimmy could shoot a ball wild. He could shoot and pick a corner like a bullet.
So were you average size back then, 155?
Yeah, I was 155. When I got discharged out of the service, that's what I weighed. I was 155 and 5'6". But In the meantime, I've had two knees replaced with complete sockets on them, and the ankles have lost all the cartilage in my ankles, and so they squeeze them down and fuse them, pin them. So both my ankles, I'm just getting over it. All of them had over half my step.
That's for the communist thing.
In the garage, and I cracked my head open. And I said, well, it's a blessing that it hit me in the head. Otherwise, I may have hurt myself.
So you're not thinking of coming to retirement, right?
Not. I haven't given too much thought.
Since the pro league started, you know, maybe
no.
A few bucks in the sun?
No, I'd be left in a vacuum being in
those concerts. Do you still go to games?
Yeah. I see it many games.
Have you ever been to any of the pro games?
Yeah.
You know, the only thing I don't like about nowadays lacrosse is how you take a player and he's either offense or he's defense.
Yeah.
And he doesn't play the whole floor. He's one or the other.
That's one thing that I disagree with too, because I think if you got the other team gets a penalty, by the time you get your defense, your defense off the floor, yeah, your offense back out, 30 seconds of the penalty is gone afterwards. So, you know, at least you may get half of the penalty, but I think that if they integrate these fellows and show them how to play defense a little better, and leave them out there for someone, they get out there for 2 minutes and or a minute or something, and one of their men get a penalty,
maybe never on the floor again.
That's a bad point, I think, anyway.
Did you make it to any of the Man Cup games in Peterborough this year?
No.
That was a really good series.
Yeah, I wished I had.
And the crowds was, you know, the end was sell out, and that arena is beautiful now.